Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 30, I believe this is. A milestone, not quite sure what it is. My name is Charles. I am a person. I'm also a software developer at the Frontside. And there's some other people with me on the call here as well.
Yeah, I'm Brandon. I also am at the Frontside. And we have one other person with us.
Hi, I am Lydia, and I am the newest member of the Frontside team.
Yeah, and not that new, I guess, but it's been, I don't know. It seems like you've been here about 6 months.
I think it's been a little over a month.
Okay, yeah. Time has never really been my forte.
And it's only felt like that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a compliment, by the way, not one. Gosh, that could be taken one of two ways. We have a guest with us that I'm pretty excited about. This is a person that I talked to at EmberConf 6 months ago or so, and I've been thinking about it ever since. And we're really excited to have Jamie White with us. Jamie, do you want to introduce yourself and let us know what you're up to and why you're world famous?
Hi, yeah, I'm Jamie. I am also a person and a programmer of web things. So I live and work in London, in England. Been involved with Ember since 2011-ish, I suppose. And I'm certainly not world famous, although I did speak at EmberConf earlier this year, and that's about as close as I've got so far.
That's probably close enough.
Yeah.
So you're in London right now, as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's apparently a different part of the earth than we're on in Texas. But in Texas, we don't really look around much to see what else might be out there. So I'll have to take your word for it. I assume that's not in Texas, though. Well, so the reason that we wanted to bring you on and talk to you is you actually gave a really phenomenal talk at EmberConf, and it made us think a lot. And we still periodically talk about it rewatched it recently and wanted to talk about some of the things that you've done there and some of the things you've been up to since then. But primarily, the talk was about community and open source, and it was a sort of a unique take on it and a more applicable one, I think, than a lot of people take in terms of it being a quote-unquote soft talk. It was stuff that people can really use to build successful communities. You really sat down and clearly did a bunch of work to analyze it, but it seemed like the gist of the talk was how to build a successful open source community. I'd like to hear more about the work that went into pulling that talk together.
Sure thing. So it was inspired by a talk that Luke Melia gave, which was his 10 tips for running a successful meetup. And I wanted to take that kind of attack. It actually took ages for the CFP to get written. That was probably the hardest part, was writing the proposal for the talk. But I sort of had the idea from the beginning that I wanted to focus on Leia's role on the core team and then take this idea that growing a community is an engineering challenge, and then try and find lots of different ways to look at that same idea and explore it. And the way I went about it was I really didn't write any of the talk for a long time, and instead I spent my time doing lots and lots of interviews. So I've got a folder in a Dropbox with 21 interviews that I did with members of the core team and people who've been a part of the community for a long time. So I've just got it in front of me now, and let's see, we've got Leia, Yehuda, and Tom, and Matt Beal, and Trek, and Eric, and Stefan, everyone really, and then other interesting characters like Divaris, whose Ember Hot Seat podcast was like, I felt like it was the center of the community for, you know, while it lasted, and other great folks like Kasper Tiedemann, who's based over in Denmark, was one of the first international speakers that we got for the Ember London meetups, and we've been firm friends ever since. And So the interviews went on, and as I went through them, I found that they work best if I warmed people up by asking them about their background and how they got into programming, and sort of, I didn't really have an agenda with any of the interviews. It was just to sort of tease thoughts out of people's heads, and then I had them all on my phone so that when I was walking through different parts of the city, I could play them back. And just, I listened back through the interviews over and over and over again to let more and more ideas kind of get lodged in my head in various places, and then gradually the talk formed around that.
Seems to me you said you had something like almost 24 hours of footage before the show started. That represents an enormous investment, but I do think it showed in the talk.
Yeah, and I'd say I took quotes from a bunch of the interviews and used them as kind of interjections as slides. But I wouldn't say that anyone in particular, there's no bit of the narrative from the talk that's like one specific interviewee. It was just little things they said that either helped ideas to form or added a bit of weight to an idea that I already had. So I was coming at it as a meetup organizer primarily, and kind of as an admirer of everything that's gone on to make the Ember community the way it is.
So at the genesis of this is interesting to me that you started as a meetup organizer and tried to use what you learned in organizing a meetup to draw a narrative through an entire community and got access to all these people to ask these questions. And so I'm curious to find out how you got into organizing meetups and how you got into that role in community in the first place. Like, how did you feel drawn to that, or were you was it sort of pushed on you? Like, how did that happen?
Well, actually, what experience have you guys all got of that? How many meetups have you all been involved with?
A lot. I've organized Ruby meetups in Utah and helped organize conferences, and I run the Ember.js meetup here in Austin and have for the last 2.5 years or so.
Yeah. And how did you fall into that in the first place?
That's such a long and weird story, but I'll abbreviate as much as I can. I went to a meetup because a friend told me about a Ruby meetup in Utah when I lived there. I'd been learning to program on my own for about 5 or 6 months, and went to a meetup and was frightened out of ever attending again. It was just a horrible experience. Everybody there was super smart, and they were saying words I didn't understand. My friend encouraged me to come back, and it's weird now to look at that and realize. So I later ran that meetup, and all the people in that room eventually, except for the one guy that really scared me that wore a fez and he was super obnoxious, and it turns out he wasn't really a regular, he was just there. Almost everybody else in that room has become a lifetime friend of mine since then. So the community became sort of my lifeline, and so I've tried to stick close to the idea of whatever community is, and I've always selected technology stacks with the community as a huge, huge part of the decision-making process since then. And when I don't see it, I try to get out in the back and push and make a community happen if I can, if I like it enough. What about you? Were you like involved with Ember as a programming language first, or did you kind of like fall into the wrong crowd and start attending meetups? Like, how did that happen?
I was following Sprout Core and then Sprout Core 2 and not really using them, just interested. And then started using Ember on first for play and then for a project, and then noticed there was a meetup organized by the one company in town who were using it at that point. And the first meetup I went to, and I think it was the first one, there were 6 of us there. And because there were so few people, it was like essentially a show and tell of what we were all using it for. And I didn't go with the intention to show anything, but once I'd started demoing the code I'd been working on, I kind of couldn't stop and found it really interesting to pick over that code with everyone else and their code. And then time wore on and the meetup changed hands once to another person at that company, and he did a pretty good job of running it, although the onus drifted away from talks at that point. And then me and my co-organizer, Ken Snyder, were sat one night, both having attended the meetup, and we were talking about what we were working on, and we were saying that it would be cool if there were talks, if there were just a little bit more energy behind going into these meetups. And so we approached the organizer and said, hey, could we help you put talks together and record them and publish them? And they invited us into the fold, and then gradually he slipped away and we became the full-time organizers, and that's how it's gone ever since. And we got lucky with a venue. We've been hosted by Sapient Nitro for, I think, 18 months now, maybe even longer than that. And they've just been, like, no questions asked. Give us everything we need every time. They're absolutely brilliant.
That sounds like a fighting robot from like Transformers. So Sapient Nitro.
Yeah, it does, cool it does name. Doesn't it? Yeah.
But and it sounds like the like you have so you have a host. So you have some experience putting like the logistics together, but there's something else happening, like just getting a place to be and a group of people. And we had this experience too at first where it was just a support group, you know, where it, a meetup is a support group for people that are like, I don't know how to work this thing. And then eventually it starts maturing into something. But I think people would be surprised how much intent and design goes into even designing the smaller aspects of a community like a meetup. And so, like you had said, you were trying to get talks to happen. This is a very and now, how has that meetup progressed over time? You said you have how many meetup members in Ember London now?
Ember London, the meetup.com group has, let me check. It's between 700 and 800, I think, at the last count. I can't remember exactly how much. And we get, it's sort of like 60 to 80, I'd say a really good month. Probably 70 people show up, and a lesser month, maybe 40 show up. So the numbers are pretty good. They're nothing like as big as the Ruby user group or the React user group, because those are such popular technologies. But we've got some really, really wonderful regulars who you can guarantee they'll turn up every time, and they're really important folks as well. It's people like Miguel Camber and Richard Livesey who are real contributors to the ecosystem. Aaron Chambers as well, who works on Ember CLI deploy.
So you said, you got me thinking about 5 minutes back, and I pushed this question onto my stack. You know, we talked about how you got into the community, but you also said during like these interviews that you would, you know, really start by getting people to talk about their background and how they got into development, how they kind of arrived where they are today. And we've got heard that kind of how you arrived at that with the London Ember meetup. But like in terms of programming in general, how did you first get into that?
I was a relatively late starter, I think. I mean, as a little kid, played around with QBasic and the various games that would appear from time to time for DOS on floppy disks. And then there was a period for most of my teenage years where I didn't really think about programming very much, and then kind of studied it at university. And then my first job was working for a company who made websites and posters for films, kind of the UK film industry. And that was almost entirely Flash work, writing lots of action scripts for... So I was there for 5 years, and so to begin with, it was action scripts. And by the end, I was writing mostly Rails. We picked up Rails relatively early on. I want to say probably around the 1.2 time frame, and got into that. But didn't really get into the community all that much at that point. I was way too scared to go along. I was aware the Ruby user group existed, but similar to the experience described, just a bit intimidated. I was sure that everyone there would know so much more than me. I just wouldn't feel comfortable. And then years later, I discovered that couldn't have been further from the truth.
Yeah, I stayed away from like community events through pure ignorance. I think through the first like 10 years of my programming career, I didn't even realize like how important the community and actually getting together with the people who are practicing the same technology as you are is. And it's, I don't know, I think it's funny. It's, you hear so many stories about, you know, from different angles, like whether you're like scared to go to the community, you have a bad experience, or you just don't even know about it. But literally, it seems to me that like the very first thing that needs to happen is you need to find out where your community is and go there. I so wish I had even discovered that there were things like conferences and meetups, you know, and I just had no idea. Which I guess seems a little bit. Maybe I'm just showing my age. It seems incomprehensible today, but I'm sure it happens too.
Yeah, I think there is like, so it totally is possible to go along to a meetup or conference and not quite work up the nerve to go and speak to anyone. I definitely had that a bit in the beginning, where I would enjoy the events and I would enjoy the talks, but even if I went along to the social part afterwards, I wouldn't really get to know anyone. And then at a certain point, I kind of inexplicably figured out how to do it and then never looked back.
Because, yeah, that was like my first 6 months too.
Maybe you could explain that to me. Because that's still where I am.
I would talk to nobody for like 6 months, and then something flipped sort of magically over time where I felt comfortable enough with this group. So what was it for you?
Yeah, I really don't know. I think part of it is seeing familiar faces and getting to know who the regulars are in a particular scene, and maybe trusting that if you are a regular too, people will have noticed that. And I think also not being shy about small talk. Like, it's perfectly okay to ask a dozen people in a row what their job is and what they've been working on recently and whether they've learned any new languages recently. Those questions are completely fine and no one minds asking them. And it usually gets something started. Mm-hmm. Or even like, what did you think of that talk is a perfectly fine question to ask and will almost always get you into some kind of conversation.
All right, I'm madly scribbling notes here.
So this is interesting. So like, it gives us some perspective on what led you to sort of focus on this topic. I'm curious though, like, at what point did it occur to you, like, hey, I actually think I may have something to say about this to the larger Ember community? Like, what motivated you to want to submit a conference talk about it? Like, and I want to dig into some of those topics from the conference talk itself, because I think there are profound things that people aren't really talking about. But I'm curious, just as a little more backstory of like, what motivated you to want to jump in and do that?
I think part of it was having really, really loved the 2014 Ember conference. And it felt really special to be there and to, you know, fly to the west coast of the US. And it had stuck with me so vividly. And I had so many firm friends through the Ember community. It felt like there was something special there, and it felt deliberate. And I thought that I had I think basically what I wanted to do was give a great big shout out to Leia and the core team, just to kind of make everyone aware of what goes into it. I wanted to bring to the light the design that goes into it, because I really do think that some people take it for granted that I think people imagine that communities spontaneously appear just because someone starts a Slack channel and then it works, or, you know, starts an IRC channel and then it just starts happening. And I wanted to kind of make a real point of all the work and thought that goes into these things.
So like all the way from the purpose of the community down to ordering tacos for your local meetup kind of thing. Like, there's so many hands in here. And it seems like you did a good job sort of pointing out that this is a deliberate process, and there are people that set the vision, there are people that set strategies, and then there are people that handle tactics. Sometimes that's the same people, but I guess maybe we should put some parameters around this. We talk about community and we've thrown this word around a bunch, but can you help define, like, a programming language is just a programming language and a framework is just a framework. This is inert, dead code that lives on GitHub and people use it to solve problems. So what in the world is the purpose or even the definition of what a community is around something like that?
Yeah, that's, let's see. Let me try and answer that with a quote from the talk. So when I spoke to Trek, he said, and I'm quoting a slide, the value of a framework is not the source code at all. The value is really the patterns and the understanding that people got working through what the problems were. So the community is it's like this ineffable thing that we all share when we tackle this shared set of problems. We've all got the same mentality over how we should approach particular problems and how we should share those solutions. And the way I see it, that goes from how we deal with how JavaScript module loading ought to happen through to the design of an application, through to the design of how humans interact with those applications, through to how we all interact together in the community. And I think it's maybe it comes down to tools. I felt like this was the part of the talk that I undercooked, underbaked maybe. So one of the original hooks into the talk was the Tompster. And in showing it to some friends, they were like, oh, so this is kind of a branding talk, which is kind of true in that things like logos and catchphrases and, you know, style guides for copy and things like that, they're tools for communicating the right things about a company or about a project. And the way I saw it, you could reflect that down into the idea that, you know, like a framework is full of tools for tackling problems in the right way in your applications. So it's like, I guess in that sense, a community is a bunch of people with these shared tools, like tools that they've, I almost feel like there's a shop down the road from here that sells homeware and really interesting and unusual pieces from all over the world. And the girl that runs it is, she's Japanese, lives in London now, but she's got this particular interest in cooking utensils that were developed in different countries, but like are weirdly similar, but have had different purposes. So she showed me, there's like this hexagonal cast iron pan, and she's got two of them. And one is from Japan is for making kind of a savory fried rice ball. And then there's another one from, I think, part of Scandinavia, which looks for all the world to be for the same thing, but theirs is for some kind of confection. And she was like, there's a common discipline at work here, and you kind of know that these people would be able to talk to each other. So I think it's common discipline, common tools, common sensibility in our approach to making applications and forming communities and the way we talk to each other and the way we try to, like the way we do our community's politics and all these kind of things, which was quite a rambling answer, I must admit. I don't have a...
No, I liked it, the idea that really everything is the tool, not just the software.
Yeah.
And that there are shared tools for thought, there are shared tools for design, shared tools for, you know, the code itself, and, you know, the code makes up only a fraction. I really like that.
Yeah, and tools for how to talk to people and tools for how to be respectful to people and make people feel welcome. And these things, I think the pattern seems to be open-minded and try different things. And then when you hit upon something that works, try to formalize it, not too much, but formalize it enough so that other people can use it, which sounds just like open source software to me. It's like we found a pattern in code that really works. Data down, actions up, we'll give it a name. We'll speak about it in public forums so that people start to latch onto this idea. And then we have this shared principle that we can keep reusing. And I think the movement for technology communities to have codes of conduct, and I especially like the code of conduct for the way it's written for next year's EmberConf, which is, I want to quote it verbatim. Yeah, simply, we won't tolerate harassment is how they've put it, which I think is, it's nice that it's been condensed down into something so terse and simple, but we've all got the shared understanding of what that means now.
It's literally, is that a quote from it, or is it just that's it? It's one sentence.
So it says, our code of conduct is simple. We won't tolerate harassment in bold. And then there's a blurb beneath it, but I think there's, so it's adapted from the geek feminism code of conduct. And I think what all of this leans upon is the fact that now this conversation has been had out in the open a great deal. You can start to rely upon the fact that people will understand the prerequisites for what that means.
So I'd love to go back to something that you talked about at the very beginning of the podcast, because you were talking about how kind of like the original idea behind the talk was sort of based on being interested in what Leia's role is in the community on the core team. And one of my favorite things about, you know, the conference this year was that every single person that I met was this really sort of dynamic, well-rounded person. And they had done some things with the conference itself to try and kind of bring that out of people. You know, they had that, the boot camp. I actually went to the boot camp.
Oh, cool. How was it?
It was fantastic. And there were, you know, only about 30, maybe 40 people there. So it was kind of this small introductory group. And it was my very first conference that I had attended. And it was nice to kind of be exposed to some of the people at the conference that were, you know, through a different lens than technology. Mm-hmm. It opened up some interesting conversations, and I'm curious if, you know, that's something intentional that, you know, Leia spoke about, or that they are, you know, intentionally trying to attract, you know, a broad range of people so that they can have contributors that have different perspectives. That was definitely what I took away from the conference, was every person I talked to, you know, had a whole set of interests outside of technology that they used to inform, you know, their contributions and help pinpoint where they can where they could use some of their existing skills to, you know, further the community's goals.
Yeah, I think that's definitely by design. And in speaking to Leia, she referenced the jQuery core team, and in particular John Resig's principle of having a diverse core team who have lots of different like professional disciplines to hand. And then I think, yeah, that's, it definitely extends out into seeking out people who have different contexts and different backgrounds. And I particularly like the Women Helping Women initiative that's been started for next year's conference, which is, let's see, Leia, Brittany, Lauren, Bear Douglas, Katie Gengler, and Liz Bailey, who are kind of this core team of, I don't know, have you looked into this much?
I have not. I do remember Liz Bailey's talk, though, at the conference, too, and thought that was, she was the one that did the beginner talk, right?
Yeah. And
she had, like, a lightning talk.
Yes. And so Women Helping Women is, it's part of a very deliberate effort to balance up the diversity of speakers at next year's conference. And the idea with this, well, let me just quote the website. We've organized a team with a range of experience to help you take the next steps. Whether you're a conference veteran or just starting out, we're here. And so the idea is to, I think what they recognized was that there are so many really brilliant, underrepresented engineers, particularly women, who don't come to speak at conferences. And part of that is maybe an intimidation factor. And because everyone feels intimidated by these things, but especially as if all you see is, you know, white guys getting up there to talk, it needs an effort to like open the doors and make it really clear to people that that's just kind of arbitrary that it's ended up that way. So I think the idea is if you're a woman and you're interested in speaking at EmberConf 2016, you can get in a chat room with these six conference veterans and hash over ideas for talks and talk about tips for speaking and get together with people so you can do you know, live rehearsals and things like that. And I can't wait to see how this works out. I have a feeling it's going to be really successful.
Oh, I was just going to say that I did think that the lineup of, you know, women speakers at the conference this past year was fantastic, especially because they had so many female contributors that were giving technical talks, not just, you know, some of the soft talks, which, you know, a lot of women sort of feel like that's the on-ramp, is you do kind of a soft talk. And then you sort of work up to the technical talk. But I love that there were several, you know, kind of first-time speakers that were giving pretty technical talks at the conference.
Yeah, like Brittany's talk, I'd argue, was maybe the most technical of the entire event. I took up the soft talk role if that's...
Yeah, it definitely set my brain to, like, melt mode. And the thing is, this seems...
was that was the one building the Firefox OS app with Ember CLI?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
And it strikes me... as a casual observer of these things, it strikes me as authentic, because they specifically, you know, you lay these foundations early, and you talk. One of the big points I want to get into is talking about that design of a community as an exercise, and so you talked about community being this meta thing that is basically the carrier of the philosophy and vision for something above and beyond the code. You could tear down the code and throw it in the garbage, and that's sort of what I realized when I asked that question of you. And the community is what carries the spirit and the vision and the purpose of a project between, you know, where you could take the code, throw it away, and rebuild it, but it would carry that same spirit and purpose, which in Ember has to do with having an opinionated set of ways to solve problems, and then other philosophies, like having Leia's role on the core team, like not be a coding role, but she's on the core team. Like that community, understanding that community and managing that is such an important part of communicating that vision and keeping that together, that's actually, you know, years ago was reserved as a role and put her in a position of like leadership and organizing. And so those decisions were made years ago. The foundations were laid for stuff that you're seeing come to fruition now, three and a half years ago, when the Ember core team was first started to be pulled together. And I think people don't realize what a long game that winds up being and how important those early decisions are about, hey, who are we? Who gets to be a part of this? What is our purpose? What do we care about? And that actually involves who you get in the room to make decisions. Because this kind of stuff just doesn't occur to people often. If you have a bunch of, you know, cigar-chomping white dudes in a room, they're going to make decisions that benefit those people. So getting just even different people in the in places of decision making, and those are things that I think may set apart a community that is successful and pushes conversations forward. And you know, every community's got a long way to go. I don't want to, like, this isn't, and I didn't get this sense from you either. This isn't a place for like Ember community to congratulate itself and pat itself on the back for being really great. But pointing out some things that are going well is totally appropriate, especially if it's something that other communities can model and emulate.
Yeah, that's all really, really well put. And I think you're right that I never really said it explicitly, but I think a lot of communities have all these good qualities. And it's kind of like, I wasn't saying that the Ember community was unique, and I don't think anyone assumed that. But I think we have all these nice qualities. And you're absolutely right that it's been... that the core team played the long game with a lot of these decisions. And I think part of that comes from Yehuda and Leia having been involved in the Rails core team and the jQuery core team and having seen what worked in both cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are there other core teams out there from open source projects that, you know, are not jQuery or Rails or Ember that make a explicit effort to include non-developers and consider, you know, people who are not necessarily, you know, their full-time job isn't writing code or primarily making technical contributions as, you know, or is this a unique innovation here? Because, you know, if it is a unique innovation, how do you scale that? How do you bring, you know, entice people, you know, designers and people from all kinds of different disciplines? And I know this is not a question that could be answered in like 30 seconds or maybe even in 30 years. But, you know, how do you scale that to make something so cross-discipline?
Yeah. My supposition was that you start to kind of explicitly recognize those roles in the community as they emerge. Part of my talk was just a list of like stuff that we've observed in the Ember community, and kind of these roles start to solidify over time, and people I think the more aware people are of the different roles you can play, the more likely they are to find something for them, you know, whether it be, sorry, the slide that got the best laugh at the talk was critic, and Ryan Florence pops up from the bottom, and it's a super important role, and it needs someone who's a bit of a raconteur and a bit spiky. And if you're someone who's got some heavy opinions, to see a community where it's absolutely clear that we welcome criticism from the outside, I think can only be a good thing, as so long as, you know, so long as it doesn't get nasty.
So Pete Hunt actually gave a talk at TXJS this year about how the React community builds their community. It was very, very different from your talk. It was a little more prickly in some ways, but it was also really good, and there were good things in there. And but it was some of the same lessons came out of it, where a lot of their they actually faced really sharp criticism up front, and that helped shape the culture of their community. But it's interesting that, you know, React, which you would think would appeal to people that are really engineering minded and, you know, it has a sort of engineering focus, they actually spend a lot of time thinking about the same thing. They may have a different set of goals and trade-offs that they want to make as a community, but they have no less of a focus on their own community than Ember, which is really, it's really interesting mm-hmm. to see these different flavors But it seems like the ones that are successful, like they don't have a hamster mascot, they have a nuclear atom as their logo, you know, like it's a different feel as a community. But it seems like there's among things that wind up finding success, it seems like they have no less of a focus or intentionality about their community. I don't know if you've noticed that across, like you said, you've been in other communities in the past. Are you, the things that you talk about, are you drawing threads through other communities that you've been a part of and you've seen things?
Certainly the Ruby community in London, the way they operate and try to grow is very deliberate and very well thought through. There's a group of people who run that, and Murray Steele runs the meetups every month, and he does he'd never admit to it, but he does a really good job of selecting a diverse set of speakers, making sure that he gets people who are brand new to speaking, and he's deliberately designed the speaking format so that every month it's a half-hour talk, a 15 to 20-minute talk, and a five-minute talk. So there's always this deliberate short kind of entry-level slot for people who feel more comfortable doing that length of a talk. And it's worked wonders. Like, they've had some terrific speakers who are new to the platform thanks to this format that he's put together. And they take their code of conduct extremely seriously and make sure to, whenever a new community branches off of the London Ruby community, it always carries it's like a framework. It spins off this new thing and it's got the same sentiments and disciplines built into it from the get-go.
I'm always pretty interested in how different communities attract beginners. And one of the things that I love about, you know, the Austin meetup is the very first time that I attended, the questions from the audience were not pretentious questions. They were real vulnerable questions about people who didn't understand something or wanted, you know, the speaker to kind of step it down a little bit to a beginner level or to the level that they felt accessible. And I'm curious if, like, I mean, I know that what you were just referencing was like how to get different levels of speakers in, but I'm wondering if you also see, you know, more interaction from the audience, you know, kind of during the kind of mixer part of a meetup where you hear more, you know, people that are just dabbling with Ember, you know, diving in a little bit more to more in-depth conversations or asking for help or, you know, asking for more resources and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So there are three things I'd say about this. I have a trick that's particular to me, which is that I do like, a little intro slide deck at the top of every meetup, and I mess it up every single time, usually with some kind of catastrophic technical goof. And I'm glad I do, because I think it helps put people at their ease, especially like if there's a speaker who's a bit nervous that's following me, they can think to themselves, well, as long as I don't mess up as bad as he did, then things will be fine. The other thing is having some regulars who are good at kind of igniting the Q&As and igniting the conversations. We've got some people, I'll shout out Aaron Chambers in particular from the London meetups, who is just there's just something particularly warm about him and completely unintimidating. And I think he really like sets people up to feel at ease to ask any questions that they want. And that's like in the Q&A immediately following a talk and in between talks. And then, yeah, we do see, I tend to find what happens at the end of a meetup is that people will cluster around particular questions that were asked. So you'll see a pocket of people gather around somebody who asked a particular question or answered a particular question to pull at that thread a little bit more. And then the one other thing we do, which is borrowed from New York, is, we do a monthly project night the week following the meetup. So our last meetup was last Thursday, and this Thursday is the project night. And sometimes people come along and want to pull at the threads that they discovered in the meetup. But actually, there's another set of people who only come to the project nights, which is kind of interesting. And they regularly come. So like there's a husband and wife duo who've been along to three or four of them now. They just arrived from Australia, And she was embarking on an Ember project and had stalled with it a little bit. So they came along and enjoyed themselves. So they've kept coming. And it's really cool. She's building a really cool kind of recipe management application, which has got some unique features to it. And they're both building the back end in Python at the same time. And it's fun to see this project advance every month. But she doesn't come to the meetups, and I don't know why exactly, because I think she'd get a lot out of them, and one day I will almost certainly force her to give a talk if she's willing.
I had a couple of things, and I think maybe I would like to talk to you again some other time about a topic that we'd previously talked about before the call about trying to keep up with Ember. Which for me and the speed of tech in general and stuff like that, I think that's a fascinating topic. And at some point I would love to bring you back on to talk about that. But there's some, you have other stuff in the, just on the community side, you have some cool stuff going on right now. I saw an announcement, oh gosh, was it last week? What's going on in London?
Yeah, that's right. So you can't really talk about this without mentioning Emberfest, which is the, so what I'm going to talk about is Ember Camp London, but I want to first mention Ember Fest, which is the European Ember Conference, which has happened the past 2 years. And I haven't managed to attend either previous year, but I've heard it was great. Matt Beale spoke at both. He said it was great. And unfortunately, it was meant to happen in the UK this year, but unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond the organizer's control, it didn't. And it was a real shame for everyone who was looking forward to going. But as luck would have it, Leo was able to organize a one-day Ember conference in the heart of London on October 29th. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to embercamp.com. So it's called Ember Camp because it's very much in the spirit of the original Ember Camp conference. So it's deliberately a bit smaller, a bit more intimate. But we'll have some great people there. We've got 9 amazing speakers. Members of the core team will be there. Faces from London, faces from mainland Europe. Tickets are going pretty fast, but there's still some available, so get on it. And yeah, I'm ridiculously excited about this. It's going to be a really amazing event.
So I did get a chance to go to that 2013 Ember Camp, and it was really, really incredible. So if anybody's in Europe and even has a passing interest in either Ember or things which are awesome, I highly recommend checking that out. It was Ember Camp was really, really amazing. Also, that means probably, hopefully they're making more of those Ember Camp stickers because mine was on my old laptop and finally kicked the bucket. And they're pretty cool little like Boy Scout Tomster stickers, which we didn't even dive into, but the idea of Tomster as a branding tool to kind of let people know that this is a fun and welcoming community, and that being like a core.
Oh gosh, yeah, that reminds me. One of the interviews I did was, I should have mentioned this earlier, one of the interviews I did was with Lindsay Wilson, the Tomster's original designer. She still does a lot of the design work for variants of him, but I know Tilda's designers also do variants from time to time. But talking to her was fascinating because she crosses a lot of disciplines and has settled into illustration, or as she calls it, kind of character creation. So this comes again back down to this idea of tools. She creates these visual tools for companies and for products and for apps. And effectively she's creating graphic languages for people. So she got her start designing the character kit for Gowalla, and things have progressed on from there. But no, her take on all of it was fascinating. And it's like any particular character of hers, any particular version of the Tomster you pick, she'll be able to tell you, you know, what the intent was with that variant, why one ear is a different color to the other one, what the glasses being on the wonk say about the Tomster and what he's, you know, what that's intended to communicate. And again, it's all deliberate. Some things are happy accidents. I mean, in an overall sense, the Tomster is a happy accident because he wasn't supposed to be the mascot, but it comes back to that thing of recognizing when something really works and then formalizing it and pushing it and making the most of it and doing so in such a way that everyone recognizes its qualities and recognizes how to use it themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it sort of reverberates throughout the community. You probably know this, and you probably have, as a meetup organizer, you probably have the same goal that I do, which is from the very first meetup we had, which was like 10 people showing up to complain about how they don't understand and nobody has anything in production and nobody understands how this thing works. And, you know, 3 years ago or whatever. But the idea is this is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be welcoming. It's supposed to be low pressure for people and isn't, you know, a place for – it's not a Mensa meeting. We're not here to impress each other with how smart we are. It's a support group, first and foremost. And, again, this is no community is perfect, and no community really lasts forever, and it's really interesting to be a part of communities that start to sort of wane and disband and move on to other things. But for watching that sort of spirit, to me, is what carried over from my time working in the Ruby community, how welcoming that was. And so I wanted to say thank you for pointing all of this stuff out personally for my part. The community that I experienced with the Ruby community in Utah and the JavaScript and in particular Ember community in Austin, I am not exaggerating when I say I would not be a developer today if it wasn't for that. Like, I would not be here. I would not be doing this. You know, I would be in a different career track and a heck of a lot less happy as a person if it wasn't for the community members taking that and sensing that responsibility and taking it seriously. And it's all, you know, nobody gets paid to do this. So it's really cool that you saw that and recognize it. And so it definitely rang a bell for me. And I wanted to thank you for pointing that out and helping kind of develop it into a formula that people can use to build welcoming, successful, thriving, and inclusive communities. So thank you very much for pulling that together. I look forward to seeing what you have in store, Ember Camp and beyond after that. Is there anything else? Do you have any other conference talks lined up?
I don't personally know. I kind of toying with an idea for next year's EmberConf, but I would always happily cede the stage to someone with a better idea. Actually, just before we move on, there's one quote that I want to read. So do you guys know Tom Stewart from the Ruby community? So he's someone I hugely admire, and he's in London too. And I was lucky enough to have a lot of his help in preparing my talk. He really coached me on how to write a talk, and his method, like the Tom Stewart method of putting across information, I think is really special. But he was interviewed on actually the blog of the people who are hosting Ember Camp Skills Matter. And there's this one little snippet that I'd like to read you guys because I think it's particularly nice. I'll have to kind of paraphrase it because I'm taking it out of context. But he says... he wants to make the point that software isn't magic and it doesn't come about by a process of divine revelation. It's just stuff made by people, and you're a person, so you can make that stuff too. And I think that's just a lovely ideology to have out there in the world.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that's probably good to close on. And thank you very much for taking time. I know that it took a long time to pull this together. We have lots more we'd love to talk about with you, and lots more I want to listen to if you can ever pull together the podcast I want you to host. So please continue to consider that, because I would definitely listen. I learned a lot, and I learned a lot just in this conversation.
Oh, me too. Thanks. It's been really fun.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks very much for joining us. As always, if you have questions, we're on the Twitters at the Front Side. If you have suggestions for more amazing and fascinating people, thank you again, Jamie, for a wonderful conversation and thought-provoking and enjoyable time. So we'll see everybody next time.